You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Homefield Apparel.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another disappointed episode of the Assembly Call, as tonight your Indiana Hoosiers fall in the Big Ten Tournament 93-66 to the Nebraska Cornhuskers, a third straight blowout loss to the Nebraska Cornhuskers in a game that, you know, early on wasn't so bad. I mean, Indiana and Nebraska were kind of going back and forth. I think it was, 33-27 at one point there with, 3 minutes left in the first half. And my son woke up, and so I go in there to try and get my son back to sleep. I'm holding him, kind of singing to him, okay, you know, I may have to miss a few plays, but I can catch up at halftime. I pull up Gamecast, and it's just boom, 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 three-pointer after three-pointer. And Nebraska, I think, ended on a 17-0 run there to end the first half. They go into halftime 50-27, and the game was effectively over. Indiana didn't really make a push in the second half. And it was just, it was the kind of game that we've seen all too often, in the Mike Woodson era, even dating back a little bit to the Archie Miller era, of just absolutely getting our doors blown off, just not really being able to do anything about it. And obviously this team has made comebacks. They made a comeback against Maryland. They made a comeback against Ohio State. So at times there has been some fight with this team. It's not like every time this has happened, but man, you know, as we talk about. What'd you say? Uh-oh. I lost Coach Marlow there a little bit.
Nope. You froze up. You froze up. I couldn't hear you, so I was going to jump in for you.
Oh, I froze up. Okay, so let me just apologize in advance. I'm doing this from my car in my in-law's parking lot. The late tip means I can't be broadcasting from inside, and I am getting some connection unstable notifications here. So, yes, jump in if you need to, Coach Marlow. But bottom line, Indiana loses, falls to 19-14 on the season. We'll see if an NIT bid is coming. We'll see if Indiana will accept an NIT bid, if it does. But another bad night for the Hoosiers in the Big Ten tournament, two things that have gone together a lot over the years, unfortunately. But I'm Jared Morris here with the coach, Jeff Marlow. I believe our student intern, Josh Pose, who is up in Minneapolis, will be joining us later from the Target Center, so we'll get some thoughts from him. But let's start this show the way that we start every show. That is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment. Not a lot to choose from, and I'm going to go back all the way to the beginning of the game. 6-2, some early momentum for Nebraska. Malik Renew just throws a terrible, wild cross-court pass, and we'll talk about Malik because he really struggled tonight. Mackenzie Mbako had one of the great saves that you'll see, leaping to make a one-hand catch, getting it to Xavier Johnson, who kicked it over to Malik Renew for a three. That made it 6-5. It was a great hustle play by Mbako. On the next possession, he got a tough rebound, drove coast to coast, ended up getting an and one on that possession, which either put Indiana ahead or tied. It was just an early example of a guy in Mackenzie Mbako who carried his aggressiveness over from the Penn State game. And look, you know, banner moments are always supposed to be kind of forward-looking. You know, so even in a bad game, hey, is there something we can look forward to? The irony, of course, is we don't know if Mackenzie Mbako is going to be here. And unfortunately, his shooting didn't really come around. He was 4 of 14, you know, so another inefficient shooting night. Did add, 7 of 7 from the free throw line. But, you know, as you looked over the back half of this season, his development was one of the most encouraging things. And we saw some plays early from him that were encouraging. But once Nebraska started hitting their three-pointers, that was really the end of the encouragement there for Indiana. But a nice little stretch there for Mackenzie Mbako. And for a freshman, I thought finished the season on a relatively strong note, albeit a little bit inefficiently as a score. All right, let's talk about our presenting sponsor. Our banner moment, as always, brought to you by our friends at Homefield Apparel, now in their seventh season sponsoring the Assembly Call and their third as the presenting sponsor for the Back Home Network. Homefield, as you know, has the largest collection of vintage IU apparel that you will find anywhere. I am wearing tonight my 1983 Indiana women's basketball t-shirt that I love to wear. And I saw a lot of people tweeting out today that they got their Indiana pregame jacket. They're not allowed to call it shooting shirts. It's a pregame jacket, which looks awesome. I ordered one, so it should be at home when I get back, and I'm very much looking forward to wearing that, even though there may not be any more games to wear it for. I'll be wearing it proudly while watching NCAA tournament games. But that's the great thing about Home Field Apparel. They have so much great stuff. Everything has a story behind it. Everything is unique and interesting, and it's not just Indiana. There's 150 or more colleges and universities there, so whether you're shopping for yourself or someone else, you'll find something for everybody and something that you'll be proud and excited to wear. The website, homefieldapparel.com. You can use our promo code HOME23 to get 15% off your first order. That's promo code HOME23 for 15% off. Once again, the website, homefieldapparel.com. All right, well, it is time to move the ball, find the open man, and get some opening thoughts from the rest of our team right now. That is Coach Marlowe. Coach, your opening thoughts on a disappointing night for Indiana basketball.
Yeah, just one of those nights, again, where I feel like I come on after one of these losses. I'm not sure whether it's the team or me that is the constant here. But the first, 10 minutes went pretty well. The first 15 minutes we were battling. But, man, that last 3 minutes, that 17-0 run to finish the first half, and I just don't know why this continually happened to this team. But whenever it did happen throughout the year, they just didn't seem to have any answer. And this is as much on the kids on the floor as it was the coaching staff, but didn't have any answer for how to stop it, how to get back in it once it started. And it just was like a kind of a deer in the headlight look. And I posted on the Discord. I was in there with a lot of the people in there that you could kind of tell toward the end of the first half when they were making the run, we panicked. We just started trying to do things that really were not part of our DNA. And that, led to that 17-0 run. And by halftime, you're down 23, and no offense, I just wasn't having much hope that we were going to make a big time comeback from 23 down. But there were some things in the second half. I will say this, I'll talk more about it as we get into it in the show. I really did like seeing, again, where's it been for a while? Where's he been? But CJ Gunn showed me something in the second half. Now, there'll be some questions about whether he's back next year. But, at least CJ came out there ready to fire the ball up.
Yeah. Good thoughts, Coach Marlowe, and we'll unpack some of that here as we move forward. Ladies and gentlemen, live from the Target Center, it's Josh Pose. Josh, let's see what your audio sounds like. I'm sitting here in my car, so you're certainly in a much better vantage point for this game than I am.
Well, they just turned down the music here, and the Keisei Tominaga lovers are officially gone from the arena, so hopefully it sounds all right. Am I sounding all right?
You sound okay. Good enough. Good enough. What were your opening thoughts on this game? What was it? What did it look like up close?
I was speechless by the way not only Nebraska, they got their shots, or they're making tough shots, but Indiana was leaving guys wide open in the first half. So a dozen threes, sometimes that's luck, like that Tominaga three at the end of the half. Sometimes that's luck, but it was just poor defense all along from Indiana. And into the second half, as soon as CJ Gunn that went down, I turned to Daniel Flick, who writes for the IDS, and I said, Woodson's going to get a technical here. Sure enough, next time down, he gets a technical from DJ Carsonson. You could see him still jawing, so I go, all right, we got to keep our cameras out. He's going to get ejected here. One of the weaker ejections, I mean, as Indiana fans, we know that ejections are fun. You get chairs being thrown, all that kind of stuff. So sitting down in an ejection, I'm a little disappointed by that, but all around, very, very disappointing game from about the 12-minute mark on of the first half.
Yeah. Josh, I'm going to mute you when you're not talking just because there's some background noise, so make sure you unmute yourself when you come in. I think it's worth saying, when you have a performance like this or a game like this, it takes two to tango, and there's going to be plenty of criticism for Indiana on this show, trust me, because it was a terrible performance. I do think there's a couple things we have to mention about Nebraska. One, you have to tip your cap to them for coming out and really playing well, really playing hard, making tough shots. I mean, Keisei Tominaga is a tough shot maker. It's one of his great qualities. And there was a play in the second half where Xavier Johnson played terrific defense on him in the corner, and Tominaga just does a step back right in his face, and you can see X just kind of shrug his shoulders. You know, there's not much you can do there. Now, were all of the threes defended like that, Josh, to your point? No, but some of them were. And Nebraska is a good enough team that they can make those. And when they get hot, they get really hot. You know, we talked about that on the postgame show last night. I talked about it on the preview earlier today. With this Nebraska team, you can't let two buckets turn into five and make it a big run, which is exactly what they did at the end of the first half, where it went 17-0. So I think it's important to tip your cap when an opponent plays really well, and they really stepped up. And the other thing, Coach Marlowe, to say is some games are just really bad matchups. Like, this is a bad matchup for Indiana. The way that we want to play basketball, you know, Nebraska kind of does all the things that counter that perfectly. Now, you know, we should have done more inside. I think Khalil and Malik on most nights are going to be able to put up, you know, more production than they were tonight. And I think you have to give some credit to Nebraska for a smart, aggressive defensive strategy. And I think you have to give some criticism to Indiana's players for not being ready to play. But this is, you know, and I say, Coach Marlowe, a bad matchup to explain it, but not necessarily to excuse it. You know, we can't just have teams in the Big Ten that we can't compete against. Like, you have to have a counter. You have to have something else that you can go to when their thing is going well, your thing needs to be going. Or you have to figure out some kind of counter the third time that you play them. Every now and then, is there going to be a blowout? It's just not your night? Yes. Three times in one season to one team that is not especially talented, but was very well coached, played very well together, and had the kind of skill that kills Indiana. I mean, you know, we can explain it all we want, but that is something as we move forward with this program that really has to change, because it does feel like sometimes you just look at the style of the opposing team and you think, geez, man, we really don't have a chance. Kind of like Penn State last year, and we didn't. They beat us every time. Nebraska this year, and it doesn't feel like we're really coming up with any counters or doing anything different. It's like we do what we do. Unfortunately, that doesn't work against them. Well, it's just a bad loss. But these kinds of losses are why we're at where we're at in the net and have no chance at the NCAA tournament. So it is something that has to be solved. And as much as I want to give Nebraska credit and believe they deserve credit, this is a major glaring red flag for this program right now, that every season it feels like there's a couple of these matchups like this that we just don't have a chance.
Yeah, I'm going to go to like three things here, Jared, because you, in my opinion, you packed a lot into that lead up that question. Number one, this shows the fact that we don't shoot the three well enough. When you're playing a team like this that does shoot the three very well, you have to be able to counter that. You can't counter it with twos, and you're not going to get enough stops. I know we're not necessarily talking numbers, but I'll bring this up now. We were minus 27 on threes tonight in a game that you lost by 30. That's the game's right there at the 3-point
line.
Actually
lost by 27.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, my math. That's why I teach social studies, not math. But okay. So there you are, and you got and they shot 20 at least, which is more than their normal average. But the fact that this team can't score in bunches from the 3-point line, the way Nebraska does, makes it a terrible matchup. Number two, the other thing, and I was texting with a buddy on this, and I even posted it in the Discord. I think the scouting report on Indiana has gotten out in terms of how we play defense. We stand, we come up out of our stance way too easy, and we give up way too easy. And so I think, in my opinion, the scouting report is out there, and Nebraska's willing to play this, is that don't give up your dribble. Because they're eventually going to stand up or lose their ability to stay locked in defensively and keep your dribble alive. Then you're going to find a place to penetrate, and you're either going to get to a layup, or they're going to overhelp when you drive, and you're going to kick it out for a wide open three. That's the second thing. The third thing is, and again, I'm not trying to bash coach here. I think this is a legit criticism of, at least for Nebraska, but it just shows that NBA philosophy that Mike Woodson has, is that he doesn't have to make adjustments because the things that they're doing are so much better than what most college teams are doing. I give Fred Hoiberg all the credit in the world. He's somewhat of an NBA guy. I'm not sure I classify him totally as an NBA guy. I know he's spent time with the Bulls. I get all that. But he was at Iowa State before that. And I've told people over the years, he should never have left Iowa State. the mayor of Ames should never have left, but that's a whole different argument. But you watch that offense. That's not a typical NBA offense, which you're seeing from Fred Hoiberg. That's a college offense, and that's a college defensive game plan. Mike Woodson has his belief that, and again, rightly or wrongly, but I think it's something that has to be looked at, that you have to be adaptable to what you're doing. And we don't adapt to things that are going on, especially against a team like Nebraska.
Josh, I see you doing a lot of nodding your head there. You want to jump in on that?
And I couldn't agree more about Fred Hoiberg's tenure with the Chicago Bulls. That's for sure.
But to Coach's point, Hoiberg had successful college coaching experience prior to that. Which is the difference.
Oh, yeah. I loved him at Iowa State. And let's be honest, Iowa State's like, all right, you're having success. We're having success with TJ. I'm going to butcher his name. Otzelberger, I believe, is how you say it. They're having great success. But Indiana, this is, I think, maybe 4 or 5 straight years, to your point, Jared, is that a team that we once considered – a low life in the Big Ten is dominating Indiana, not once, not twice, but sometimes even 3 times in a season. Tonight, obviously, Minnesota's much closer to Lincoln, Nebraska than Bloomington, Indiana. But there was 3 times as many Nebraska fans in this arena than Indiana fans. So I'm not giving excuses by any stretch of the imagination. But if you're going to try to combat this raucous crowd, it was raucous from the beginning, you got to come out a lot stronger than they did. Indiana should have been up maybe 6-8 points. If they were too sloppy with the basketball, missing open shots, X missed maybe 5 layups on the day. So they kept Nebraska within an arm's reach, and Nebraska just took over. So, and the 3-point shooting, Indiana, it was so tough for them to get going inside because Nebraska knew what was going to happen. They were going to go to Ware. They were going to go to Renew. So they packed the paint and said, all right, Indiana, you're going to try to beat us from outside. And Indiana could not hit a shot to save their life.
Yeah, no, it was a smart game plan by Nebraska. It's one that we've seen from them. It's how Rutgers typically plays Indiana, which is we're going to pack it inside. We're going to send doubles. If you start making shots, okay, maybe we'll have to respect you and change it. And unfortunately, Indiana couldn't do that. You know, this is a game where you really needed McKenzie Mbako to step up and, you know, not just be a guy who could drive and get to the line. Again, the 7 of 7 from the free throw line is great. But if you're going to win, you need McKenzie Mbako going better than 1 of 5 from 3-point range. You know, you probably need Anthony Leal to hit a couple. You need Cups to hit one. I mean, you know, it was just, especially if Nebraska was going to do what Nebraska typically does, and they did, Indiana was going to have to make some threes. But the other thing is you were going to have to at least get a minimum level of production from your big guys. And, you know, when you look at Khalil and Malik, you know, I really think their performance is the other big story here. And, you know, Josh, it's a good point. Nebraska had a very good defensive game plan. It frustrated both of those guys. So on the one hand, hat tip to Nebraska. You know, and Khalil has really, you know, especially over this last 5-game stretch, you know, really played well for Indiana. You know, if this ends up being his last game as a Hoosier, it's not a good way to go out. It's not representative of how he played all season long. 8 points, 7 boards, you know, 3 turnovers, a block, a couple steals. He just wasn't able to impact the game like he typically does. But to me, the more interesting one is Malik Renew, because I think we all think there's a chance Malik Renew is back. He has eligibility. He's not an NBA prospect. There's always a risk that guys transfer, but, you know, given the NIL war chest that Indiana has, that every, you know, as everybody's reported, sounds like we'll be able to make a, you know, a good offer for him, and hopefully he comes back. But, you know, Coach Marlowe, he hasn't seemed like the same guy to me over the last 10 games. And, you know, I don't want to cast any aspersions. I have no idea. I don't know the young man. We're not there at practice. We're not in the locker room. I think it's highly irresponsible to try and guess at why that might be. You know, who knows why it could be? There could be an injury we don't know about. He could have something going on off the court. There's 8,000 reasons why college kids struggle. But the bottom line is, watching him play, this is not the same guy from January and February. You know, obviously the defensive issues and the fouling we've talked about a lot, but even offensively, he just seems off kilter. It's like when there's a decision to pass or shoot. It feels like sometimes he's shooting when he should pass, trying to go through triple teams, you know, taking too long to make a decision. So by the time he decides to pass, the pass isn't there. Just, you know, the kind of stuff that we weren't seeing from him. And so I'd love to get your thoughts just on what you've seen, you know, from Malik, you know, over these last few weeks, because I think his development, you know, for Indiana to really bounce back next season and make it better than this year, I think getting Malik back as a cornerstone, having him then as an upperclassman to help lead you is really important. But, you know, whatever has gone on here over the last, you know, 8 to 10 games for him, those things are going to have to get cleaned up, because Indiana is going to have to be able to rely on him for more, unfortunately, than what he's been able to give us recently down the stretch. Even with Indiana winning, you know, those five games, his performance was a little more up and down. So just your thoughts on what you've seen from Malik tonight and over the last few games.
Well, I agree with you. I'm not going to try and speculate on anything that's going on with him, because we're not in the locker room. We're not in his personal life. For those of you who haven't seen me on the show before, I'm a big Ted Lasso fan, and the great episode where Roy Kent talks about none of us know what's going on in somebody's life is one of my favorite episodes. So I'm not going to speculate on that. But he has struggled. He really, the word I use is regressed here over the last 3 weeks to a month. Just a lot of silly fouls. I mean, Robbie Hummel called it out tonight on the broadcast. Just silly. I mean, and sophomore has to be a little smarter than that. I like Malik. I think it'll help if you can spot up shooters around him more than we have, then allow to get him some space. But he has some improvement to make. And for me, the big improvement he has to make is, assuming he's back, he has got to be better out of a double team. Tonight, you talked about the Mbako save. Well, a little bit later, he airmailed one again, but Anthony Leal wasn't tall enough or athletic enough to go save it. And there's been too many numerous times this year where he has gotten into a two-on-one, three-on-one, where he's tried to, and he did some tonight, where he's trying to force it up. Kick it out. Live to fight another day, but you don't have to force up every shot you get just because you get it within 15 feet and can back down a little closer. So I'd like to see Malik come back. I'd like to see us put some shooters around him. I don't know why, but he just really went into a funk here. You know, and sometimes the other thing I will say, this as a player, confidence is a funny thing. When you have it, it's amazing the things you can do. But it's a very fine line between having that confidence and losing it to look at where you look like you haven't hardly played basketball ever before. So, but I'd like to see us put some shooters around him, and I'd like to see him be better at handling the double team.
Josh, anything that you noticed, you know, kind of watching Malik in the arena? Because I know it's a much, much better vantage point for just seeing, you know, some of the things off the court that we can't always see on TV.
Put into perspective, like, watching them warm up the past 2 days and even the past 10 games, I'd say, since really the start of
the spirit of performance is what defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet, crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships. The ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
February, Malik just hasn't been loose. He wasn't loose. Everybody else is kind of, just during warmups, just loose. And there's a very tense look to him. More like nerves, and everybody gets nervous. Basketball is 90% mental and 10% physical at times. And he just seemed like he was in his own head. And then yesterday, following the win, the Big Ten has open locker rooms for 30 minutes. And we went in there, and he was just so tense. He was so guarded, very antisocial, very quick answers. He's so emotional. He's an emotional player. but he just seemed so guarded yesterday in the open locker room. Everybody was excited. Everybody, it was a thrilling victory, but it was just one of those things where you notice him off in the corner and there's a couple people talking to him and he's just incredibly guarded.
Well, incredibly guarded is an interesting phrase to use because he's also being incredibly guarded on the court, you know, and I think that's, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, sometimes you look for deeper meanings in things, and maybe it's as simple as it became very clear there for a while that Malik was the go-to guy and he's putting up 20, 25 points. Defensive attention is going to go his way, and it definitely has. That has unlocked things for Khalil Ware, you know, but unfortunately, you know, Malik is now at this point, you know, with how his sophomore year progressed, he was really, I mean, on kind of a star trajectory and still can be that guy. But, you know, as and Trace Jackson Davis learned this same thing his sophomore and junior year. It's like you come in, you know, now he played a lot more as a freshman and scored a lot as a freshman. But then you go through ups and downs as, you know, two steps forward, a step back, two forward, a step back. Defenses really focus on you. You have to figure out more counters. You have to figure out other ways that you can adjust to the defense. And it just felt like that really stalled down the stretch for Malik. And, you know, I think all IU fans, I think, believe in his potential. Some are frustrated by how he's played recently, and I completely get that. I'm sure he's more frustrated than anybody. But as we look forward for the future of this program, his continued development is absolutely one of the most important things, keeping him and getting him to continue developing. And, you know, unfortunately, it just kind of felt like that development hit a little bit of a snag here at the end of the season. And on a night like tonight, Indiana really needed a lot more from Malik and from Khalil. And unfortunately, they just weren't able to get it from either one of them. All right. We're going to move on to segment two. So coming up as we continue our breakdown of Indiana's 27-point loss to Nebraska, we'll point out tonight's meaningful moments you might have missed. And then we'll go inside the numbers to highlight the most important statistical notes from the game. If you're listening to the Assembly Call.
This is Verdell Jones. What's better than an epic buzzer beater? The full court dribble and a perfectly placed pass to set it all up. And of course, celebrating with Hoosier Nation afterwards. So join Jared, Andy, Ryan, and Coach on the Assembly Call after every IU basketball game. Go Hoosiers.
Thank you, Verdell. You are listening to the Assembly Call IU postgame show being broadcast live from my car in my in-laws' driveway. So if I sound different, I certainly know I look different because the light shut off up here. I hope that doesn't mean that the battery died in the car. We'll figure that out later. But anyway, just a great night. Truly just been a great night all around. I'm Jared Morris here with Josh Pose, who's live at the Target Center in Minneapolis, and Coach Jeff Marlowe. And it is time now for tonight's meaningful moments that you might have missed. Meaningful moments that you might have missed. This segment brought to you by our friends at Hoosier Ticket Project, where they help individuals and families experience IU athletic events in person for the first time through the generosity of alumni and fans. To learn more about how you can donate money or extra tickets to help create meaningful moments for other IU fans, visit HoosierTicketProject.org. That's HoosierTicketProject.org. You know, Josh, I'll be curious to know if there are any meaningful moments that stuck out to you from being there. Coach Marlowe, you know, one that really stuck out to me, and it was before the big run in the first half, but it was a harbinger to me of bad things to come. And that is when it was 29-21. So Nebraska, it was after their first run, you know, that 14-2 run that they went on that gave them that first initial lead. You know, but it's 29-21. Indiana, you know, scored a couple buckets. You know, McKenzie and Bacco made three free throws. And so we're kind of hanging around. But Malik Renew took a three-pointer. Nebraska got the rebound, pushed it, and we turned in one of the worst possessions of transition defense I've ever seen. Khalil Ware, unfortunately, was the biggest culprit, where he just, you know, he was back, but there was just a complete lack of awareness. There was no communication. Nebraska gets behind Indiana for a wide-open layup. And I really think our transition defense has been, you know, on point during this winning streak. And just, you know, all the defense. I mean, I know there's always a certain level of, you know, just, you know, the offense drives a lot of the success or failure when it comes to three-point shooting. But at the same time, you can impact it by being there on the catch and making things uncomfortable and communicating on, you know, knowing who's got who. And that's been a problem for Indiana this season. It was better over the last five games, and it was bad again tonight. And to me, a play like that in transition defense is just indicative of the overall mentality it felt like Indiana had defensively, which is too lackadaisical and too willing to just give up something easy and not fight through the possession. And again, it's disappointing because, you know, those aren't the kind of plays we've seen from Khalil. Those aren't the kind of plays we've seen from these guys over the past five games, but it all came rushing back tonight. So that moment stood out to me. Your thoughts on that, and then any other meaningful moments that stood out to you?
You took the one I was probably going to go to. So kudos, Jared, you didn't know that. But yeah, I mean, that's just a flat out, lazy isn't the word I'm looking for here. Just unaware. Like we were talking about, just unaware, being kind of not locked in defensively, because Khalil got back, but he thought the only person he had to worry about was Mast, who was coming up the floor toward him, I think it was, and Gray's running right behind him for a layup, and that just can't happen. And that, to me, was kind of the symptomatic. I even wrote that down. That was kind of a symptom of just the way the defense kind of played tonight. The other meaningful moment I had, and I thought you kind of touched on it a little bit, Jared, while they're hitting 12 threes in the first half, we never really made them uncomfortable. We didn't run anybody off the three-point line. We were going under screens for the most part, and that was not a strategy that I understood of why we were going under screens on shooters for much of, if not all, the first half. So those were kind of defensively, those meaningful moments were the things I had, because they were, to me, they really led to some of the issues that all kind of came rushing together at the end of the first half.
Josh, your thoughts on those? And then is there anything that stuck out? I thought you gave great insight there on what the locker room was like after last night's game. Anything else you picked up being in the arena?
Well, the miscommunication on defense has been just – it went away in the five-game winning streak for periods of times it came back. Tonight, it was, are we switching? Are we hedging? Are we going under? Are we going over? There was no communication from players on the floor, no communication from guys on the bench. The coaching staff was trying to give them a sense of direction. There was no sense of direction for Indiana. My meaningful moment that – I'm assuming everybody at home missed. I'm not sure if they showed it on the Big Ten broadcast, but Yasir Roseman gathered the entire team at half court after the game. And the entire team was surrounding him, and he talked to them for maybe 30 seconds on the court. And he had an emotion. Everybody was emotional. He had CJ Gunn crying. Malik Manu was crying. X, I'm assuming, was crying, but had a towel over his face. Got a hug from Fred Hoiberg on the way out. But there was just a great moment right there. And that's something that the culture was not bad. There was a time in this season that I've heard that they wanted to turn it around. They said, we have to turn around because this is our last go around as a team. Obviously, there's going to be guys going to the NBA. There's going to be guys going into the transfer portal. So we got to turn around now. So that moment right there is my meaningful moment that most everybody missed on TV, I'm assuming, and a lot of people missed in stadium.
Interesting. I mean, it's hard when seasons end, you know, and I think a lot of us spent a lot of time wondering in January and February at times during several of the blowouts that happened, you know, how committed are these guys to doing all the things you have to do to win? You know, is it just a young team that doesn't understand it? Are there problems? Yada, yada. And none of us know for sure. So there's a lot of time speculating. But I think for this team to come back and win five straight games, it shows you something. I mean, there was a togetherness there. You know, I think, you know, the point that you mentioned, you know, whether this program truly has built a winning culture, you know, I think we can debate, and that's probably a discussion for another time. But I think that your point in this case, in the micro sense, is correct. I mean, there was something here, you know, and we didn't see a lot of it tonight, but you don't get a five-game winning streak when your season is, you know, all but left for dead without there being some of that and being some kind of internal leadership that helped get guys going. So I'm happy to hear that about, you know, that at the end of the game, not surprised. But yeah, go ahead, Coach.
Yeah. I'm not trying to interrupt you, Jerry. I will say this, a meaningful moment for me. And I don't know if he would have made a difference in a 27-point game, but I made the comment in the Discord. I had the conversation with a couple of my buddies. We were going to miss Trey Galloway tonight more than we did last night. And I obviously we missed him last night, but any chance, in my opinion, I said this before the game, so anybody wants to go back and look in the Discord or anything like that, they can find it. I'm not saying this after a blowout. Any chance, in my opinion, in my mind, of winning tonight hinged on Trey Galloway being able to play and just A, provide that defensive game that he can provide, and some of the intangibles he brings to the floor, and a little bit of the offensive game he can bring. But it was going to be an uphill battle anyway. As we said, all right, this was not a good matchup, but Trey Galloway was sorely missed tonight on that floor. And that's a meaningful moment for me.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely correct. And that needs to be mentioned. That's part of what made last night's victory over Penn State so impressive, is doing it without Trey Galloway. You know, and I think, you know, especially a few weeks ago, if you're like, hey, you're going to play the Big Ten tournament without Trey Galloway, how many games is Indiana going to win? I'll set the over-under at 0.5. I think everyone would have taken the under. And so, you know, we feel terrible tonight because we lost and the season might be over. But, you know, going 1-1 in the Big Ten tournament, based on how the season has gone without Trey Galloway, there's some positives to take from that. The problem, you know, if Indiana had lost by 4 or 5 points to Nebraska in a competitive game, that statement would land a lot better, I think, when basically the last 15 minutes of the game are non-competitive and you lose by 27 points. No one wants to hear that, because it's like, you know, would Trey Galloway have made a big difference? You know, he didn't even play that well against Nebraska the last time we played him. It was one of his worst games where he had 6 turnovers. No, I'm with you, Coach. Trey Galloway is going to make a huge impact for this team, just settling things down and, you know, giving you some more offensive punch in a game where you're really going to need it. Unfortunately, you know, the rest of the guys weren't able to rally as well without him as they did against Penn State. One guy who certainly tried, however, was C.J. Gunn. And, you know, there was a time, this was, gosh, it was still relatively early in the second half. It was 62-40. And I mean, the game was over by that point. It's kind of started to have a little bit of an open gym feel to it. And CJ was just chucking shots. And Xavier Johnson drove in, found him in the corner, you know, and he took an early shot in the shot clock. And all the assistant coaches, especially Brian Walsh, just kind of like threw their hands up. Brian Walsh like kind of puts his hands in his head. You know, and I don't know if maybe they had said, let's try not to take shots early or whatever. But clearly they weren't happy with that shot. CJ Gunn, however, was not deterred. He continued to take shots. So CJ Gunn ends up leading the team in shots taken at 15 and scoring with 17 points, playing 24 minutes. He did get some first half minutes, but most of his scoring came in the second half. And, you know, Coach Marlo, on the one hand, you sit there watching 15 minutes of a Big Ten tournament game, or let me be more charitable, maybe 10, 8 to 10 minutes of a Big Ten tournament game that basically just felt like we're just playing out the string. There's no defense. Nebraska's driving by us. We're just taking early shots. The coach is getting a meaningless ejection in the last game of the season when it can't do anything to help you in the future. I mean, it was such an embarrassing way to go out after how tough and hard fought last night was. And I'll get back to CJ in a minute, but that's just the dichotomy of this season and this program, really, under Mike Woodson. It's like there have been some really impressive wins, but, man, there have been some just complete capitulations, you know, in games like this one. And, you know, what we do about that moving forward, I don't know, but it's been 3 seasons. Like, this is baked into the cake now, and it's something that really has to get fixed. Anyway, going back to CJ Gunn, on the one hand, you watch that, and I'm thinking to myself, like, dude, like, maybe at least try to work the ball around a couple times, like, run something. And then on the other hand, I'm thinking, well, no one else is doing anything. Why not go out there and try and make shots? You know, because the only chance to win is for someone to get red hot and just start making shots early in the shot clock. So you could actually call it a rational strategy, a rational high-risk, high-reward strategy for coming back in the game. I don't know. You know, it was just, you know, in that kind of game flow, you know, but also if his coaches are going to allow it, you know, and you can put your head in your hands all you want to, but if the guy's playing and he's shooting like that, then you're accepting it. So I don't know. I was of two minds about it. I still don't quite know how I feel about it. But at the end of the day, CJ goes out, scores 17 points, and actually was one of his most efficient offensive games at 7 for 15. So I think it's probably a little hard to criticize him when no one else was doing anything and nothing else was working.
Yeah, I'm not going to criticize the kid at all. I was happy to see him getting shots up. And when people are going to say, if they're going to be on him about making some passes and trying to get more people involved, well, again, I'm not trying to be negative on the night, but you know, we're trying to stay as positive as we can on postgame shows, but this offense doesn't move very much to begin with. It's not like they run a bunch of sets with a bunch of cuts and a bunch of motion. It's stand around offense anyway. So if CJ gives up, I don't know where it's going to go. So I for one, kind of a shooter mentality. I was glad to see somebody come in and go, give me the darn ball. I'm firing it up. And if I get hot, I get hot and I can run some off. But my thing about that, Jared, is I can't remember the exact game, but it might have been the last Nebraska game or where it was. But CJ had a second half kind of similar to this, where he went off for like 11 or 13 points. We all thought he was going to get some run, and he's basically sat the bench for the last 5-6 games. And now people will say, but we won five in a row while he was sitting on the bench. Maybe there's something to that. I don't honestly know, but I'm not sure why the one kid that can maybe at least get his own shot fairly easily, maybe it's not always a good shot, but he can get his own shot, and he's shown he has the ability, like today, to hit some shots. Why we're not giving him more run on a team that struggles to make shots? I didn't understand that part of it. But I'm not going to go negative on CJ for getting some shots up. My answer to that would be is my role, shooter. That's what I would tell people. Like, CJ, why are you shooting so much? My role is a shooter. That's what I'm told to do.
I would say, and Josh, we'll get your thoughts on this, and then we'll move to inside the numbers. I think when you think back to CJ's most impressive, or maybe the better way to say it is his most efficient offensive moments, a lot of times it's been in games that were already decided. You know, it was coming in second halves and kind of being a very comfortable, free-flowing environment where he seemed a lot more comfortable. The problem is his efficiency in actual competitive game situations wasn't as good. You know, you have the Michigan game at Michigan early in the season when he played a really big role. But there aren't a whole lot of other examples of competitive games that went down to the wire that, you know, the coaches trusted CJ enough to put him in and that he was able to deliver in those moments. And that's, you know, just part of his development that hasn't happened yet. But to me, Josh, I think that would be the distinction. It's nice to see someone come in and make shots at the college level. No question about it. That's difficult to do. But there seemed to be a wide gulf between his efficiency and games that were already decided.
He was out of reach as soon as CJ Gunn was taking shots with 24 seconds left on the shot clock. Every time he touched the ball, we were like, oh, it's going up. Here we go. Is it going to go in this time? Maybe, maybe not. Back to your point with Woodson and getting the meaningless ejection. It was already known that they weren't going to accept the NIT bid. Zach Osterman broke it with about 2 minutes left in the game.
Oh, did he really? I didn't even see that.
Yes, he broke it. That a source said that they will not accept an NIT bid. I don't even know if they deserve one after tonight, but that's beyond the point.
Wouldn't that be the irony? Oh, great. Well, you're not getting one anyway, Indiana. So. Jeez.
So what I'm thinking, as soon as he gets ejected, he told Xavier Johnson last Sunday that he gets him. He understands him. He's there for him. And to not be there for him when he steps off the court for the final time in his college basketball career does not sit well with me at all.
Great point.
It just does not sit well with me at all. You're saying you're there for these guys. You're there for them. You're going to do nothing with that ejection. You're going to go sit in the locker room. And obviously some coaches have their styles, and Woodson has his style, but you got to be there for your seniors when the game's got lost and you know this is the final game. You got to be there for your seniors. And that's my key takeaway.
Man, that is a great point, and I'm glad you brought that up. I hadn't even thought about that angle of it, but you're 100% right, especially if they already knew that they wouldn't accept an NIT bid, so they knew this is the last game. You know, look, I get it. Sometimes, you know, you work officials to try and get calls in the future, right? That's the whole reason that you do it. You know, and so if you get ejected, you make a point with that official, you know, okay, maybe it, you know, maybe something happens with it later in the season. Or, you know, coaches get ejected to try and fire up their team. So if it had happened in the first half, you know, after Tominaga hits his third three and Woodson's just, you know, going nuts and, you know, wanting to try and show the team this is how you have to fight, okay, I get that. But 5 minutes left in the game to do it like that, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, not only, you know, is it too little too late and doesn't do anything, but you're right, you're not there for the final buzzer of a season with your team, which is, and maybe he wasn't thinking it that through, and who knows, maybe in the post-game press conference he'll say, like, I made a mistake, I shouldn't have done that. You know, let me leave all kinds of room for that because we're reacting to this afterwards, and so I don't know anything else that's happened. But just based on what we've seen, I had the same thought as you in the moment. It was like, what are we doing here? Like, what's the point of this? So, I don't know. Coach Marlow, you were a coach. You probably wanted to get ejected several times.
Yeah, but at the high school level, there's a little bit more from your administrators, Jared, that keeps you from getting ejected. You know, you still have to answer to, you know, there's some school boards and stuff you answer to when you get ejections in high school, at least in some places. I want to go back. I thought Josh brought up a good point. And Jared, I want to go back to your point as well. They're both concerning Mike Woodson. Yes, we talked a little bit. We've talked a lot this year about the number of blowout losses that Mike Woodson has had in his 3 years now at IU. But think about it this way, and I did not come up with this originally. So the person in the Discord who came up with this, I can't remember who it was, but kudos to them. The last three seasons have all ended in a blowout loss. The last game of the season has been a blowout loss. They aren't getting beat at the buzzer. They aren't getting beat in the last 2.5 minutes because they just didn't make some shots. The other team made free throws. They're getting blasted. And that, I think we go back to your comment, Jared, that's a concern that has to get fixed.
Yeah, well, Coach, that is a great transition into inside the numbers because, I mean, if you just tally up the loss totals against St. Mary's, Miami, and Nebraska actually don't do that. It's late at night, and I want you all to be able to sleep. But we're going to go inside the numbers, brought to you by Jackson Hewitt Tax Services. If you live in Bloomington or the surrounding areas or out of your car, like I do apparently now, and you want your taxes done right, contact our friend and Chat Mob Hall of Famer Megan Mahaffey and her team in Bloomington, Bedford, and Martinsville by calling 812-339-3334 or by visiting jacksonhewitt.com. Gentlemen, would you like to hear the most ironic statistic of the season for Indiana basketball? You ready for this? In a 27-point loss, Indiana goes 13 for 13 from the free throw line. 100% from the free throw line, baby. Woohoo! Amazing. Amazing. How many games? Josh, okay, if you're going to write the email tonight, can I give you an assignment for one of your meaningful stats? Will you go look?
That written down.
How many games would we have won this year if we shot 13 for 13 from the free throw line? Because it made no difference tonight. But there's a lot of nights I bet it would have made a huge difference. So darn the free throw variance, I guess. I don't even know what to say about it at this point. Times.
They weren't even when, like, they weren't CJ Gunn minutes. They were in the first half. I think they went 11 for 11. It was – I actually started writing about it because obviously you want to get ahead writing when the game's all set. And I was like, oh, they're 11-11. Let's see if that keeps up. And I started writing. I was like, hey, look at this, guys. Because I've written so many times about the free throw shooting. I'm like, you know what? One positive thing today. We shot great from the free throw line. And, oh, that's going to be a fun night tonight. We have time. We're ordering some pizza.
Good.
We're gonna make the most of Minneapolis, Minnesota for spring break.
As you should. If I need to send you more money, let me know. Have fun. All right. Other numbers. You know, the other number that I want to point out, we can talk 3-point numbers and all the team numbers. None of them are really that compelling to me. The one guy that we haven't talked about, Josh, you mentioned him, is Xavier Johnson. And obviously, his performance was going to be very important tonight. He needed to limit turnovers. He needed to create. He goes out in his final game, 5 assists, 1 turnover. Indiana did have 12 turnovers, which was too many, but a lot of those came from the front court. Khalil with 3, Malik with 3, Mackenzie Mbako had 1, Caleb Banks had 1 late. That one obviously didn't matter. But I thought X was able to do a nice job of limiting some of the turnovers, you know, grabbed 5 rebounds, which was really nice. You know, the issue, 4 of 11, one of you guys mentioned that felt like he missed like 5 layups. You know, that's the one of the things for X that never really came back these last five games, even though he was back playing, was his confidence as a scorer. You know, you could tell he was kind of unsure about when to shoot and when not to shoot. When he would make a good drive, he wasn't finishing with confidence and conviction. And so, you know, it's like he would get too far under the basket and release the ball late, and he would be long on the layups. You know, and so obviously you would have liked to get more than 8 points from him. But coming into the game, if you told me he's going to give you 8 points, five assists, five rebounds, a turnover, and a steal, I would probably take that. And then you say, okay, a lot of the other guys are going to have to score and do some of the heavy lifting, but you'll take that from, you know, Xavier. And he had some defensive possessions, just like all the guys, that he wasn't fully locked in and got lost. But, you know, Josh, for a final performance from Xavier Johnson, I guess the irony of it is, for a guy who has really oscillated between the poles of being so great and so bad, this was just kind of like a middle-of-the-road performance. You know, he kept his emotions in check, even though things weren't going, you know, for him, but really wasn't able to kind of make the big impact we've seen him make in the past, but at least was able to limit some of the really, really bad turnovers that have plagued him throughout his time at IU.
Yeah, a couple missed layups here and there. It wasn't anything to be, like, concerned about. Sending himself into the third row when Tominaga gave a little bit of a bump, I kind of enjoyed. As a defensive guy myself, I watched Tominaga get away with it in the first half, and I was like, if Xavier Johnson's on him, he'll fall over, because Gabe Cupps could have gotten that call if he fell over. One thing I noticed, he did keep his emotions in check, but I think there was a out-of-bounds call, and it went to Indiana's favor. It was right in front of the Nebraska bench, right next to us, and they're complaining about the call. He goes, guys, you're up by 20. Chill out. Mid-game, I think there's 8 minutes left. I'm like, oh, my gosh, what is going on in this game?
Indiana basketball players are just telling everybody to chill out these days.
I mean, one thing to say to the Indiana fan base, but the Nebraska band, it was unbelievable how funny that moment was. And because he locked right back into the game. He has this like serious, like competitive side to him. But then there's times in the game, I saw it yesterday, where he'll just let loose, like make a joke to the official and make a wisecrack, and everyone's laughing. So his presence will be missed, not only on the floor, but off the floor in that locker room next year.
Coach Marlowe, any numbers that jump out to you that you want to mention?
Yeah, I'm going to go to the front court. The front court had to come up huge for us tonight, as we mentioned already. Didn't have Trey Galloway. You wanted X just to be efficient, and he wasn't super efficient. But I agree with you, Jared. I thought X gave us some solid minutes tonight. The five rebounds, the five assists, 8 points. But your starting front line, your five and your four combined for 17 points, and your all Big Ten center had zero in the first half. And again, he's played phenomenally. He's all the things we heard about him coming into the season, about he was soft, he didn't have motor, all the things that kind of the rumors, the innuendos that came out of Oregon about him proved out to be fairly untrue. But in a game like tonight, he can't disappear in the first half and put up a goose egg. And to me, not only did I think we had to have Trey Galloway, I thought Khalil Ware had to have a monster 25, 30-point game, and that obviously didn't happen.
Yep. No, it did not, unfortunately. Josh, any other numbers for you or else? Well, I guess people can read your numbers. Josh has been writing our post-game 3-2-1s, as hopefully everybody knows. I guess it's kind of pointless to promote it for the very last one of the season, but we'll do it anyway. Subscribe to the Substack, www.assemblycall.com, and you'll get Josh's article tomorrow morning, which will begin with three meaningful stats. So you want to give us a preview of maybe what you thought the most meaningful stat was?
We touched on it earlier, I believe, with Rare. Wow, can't even get words out. That game was so bad. Wear and Renew, their lack of production.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And
listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
I didn't officially start writing that piece, but outside of those garbage time minutes that Ware got buckets-wise, they might have combined for maybe 12 points combined. And they were non-factors, and that was the biggest, that was the most meaningful thing to me, is that when you needed your stars the most, they disappeared. And we can say that with Xavier Johnson. We can say that not really with Mackenzie Mbako, but you can say it about almost everybody on the team that has contributed. They just disappeared for that 12-minute stretch in the first half, and it all went downhill from there.
Yeah. Well said. All righty. Let's move on. Coming up on the assembly call, we're going to hand out our final game balls and Hoosier Hustle Awards of the season, discuss a lingering question, and look ahead to what's next. That's on the assembly call. Stick with us.
Nick Zeisloft, I never miss an open three, and I never miss an episode of The Assembly Call.
Thank you, Nick. You are listening to The Assembly Call, IU postgame show. I'm Jared Morris here with the coach, Jeff Marlowe, and Josh Pose, live from Minneapolis at the Target Center. We are discussing Indiana's season ending, we think, apparently, since Indiana is not going to accept an NIT bid. Indiana's season ending loss to the Nebraska Cornhuskers. Third loss of the season to Nebraska, all by 15 or more points. Not good, not good. But it is time now for our game balls presented by our friends Allie and James at Bloom Environmental. And they want to make sure everyone knows about radon, a colorless, odorless, radioactive gas that is the leading cause of lung cancer in non-smokers. According to the EPA, Monroe County and other surrounding areas throughout Indiana are expected to have elevated levels of radon above the action level recommended for mitigation. Contact Bloom Environmental today, mention Assembly Call, and get a free radon test kit and mitigation estimate. You can learn more at bloomenviro.com. I know there are people out there listening to this saying there should not be game balls for 27-point season-ending losses. Your voices are heard. You are probably right, and this is a difficult one to give a game ball for. But, Coach Marlowe, I'm gonna give mine to Mackenzie Mbako simply because – you know, he was the one starter who at least produced in double digits. And even though he was inefficient as a scorer, it really felt like for about the first 12 minutes of the first half, he was the one guy keeping Indiana in it. And the dam would break soon after that, and nothing else really mattered from that point. But when the game was competitive, I really thought Mackenzie was the one guy that was, you know, aggressive and really looking to make an impact on both sides on every possession. And, you know, of all the guys, you know, he really seemed to be the one that most brought that mentality to the game. So for his 16 points and for that mentality, my final game ball of the season goes to Mackenzie Mbako. How about you?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you. And not only the 16 points, Jared, but he did also have 7 rebounds. I'm trying to make sure I'm looking at the right line. He had 2 blocks and a steal. So I'm totally in agreement with you about Mbako for the game ball. I do want to say this, you know, if we're turning down an NIT invite, would we take a CBI invite?
No.
I'm just curious, you know, can we take a CBI invite and keep playing?
No, no. You definitely would not turn down the NIT to go to the CBI, where I think you have to pay your way. if I recall correctly. So that will definitely not be happening. You know, I don't know. Maybe we'll save the NIT debate for another day. If we're not going to take, if it's already done and we're not going to take it anyway, we don't need to belabor the point right now. Josh, your game ball.
Mackenzie Mbako, not only because he was the guy, the go-to guy in the first half when the game was close, but 7-of-7 from the charity stripe. I'm a free throw guy. As much as Coach Tonsoni makes fun of me for my shooting or lack thereof and my skills, all about free throws I am. And 7-of-7 from the free throw line, six of them, it was three apiece. He made three free throws twice,
yes,
after being fouled on a three-point shot. And those are tough, especially with a kind of an away environment and people booing. Going 6-of-6 on those free throws is worthy of the game ball to me.
Yeah, you know, and that's a great point. I mean, if you count, you know, since he did complete the three-point plays, if those had counted as made threes, he would have been 3-of-7 from downtown on the night, which obviously makes his final line look a lot better. So kudos to him for being able to step up and make those free throws. A lot of good things from him down the stretch. You know, again, it was his freshman season. You know, did he play up to expectations? I would say when you look at the production from day one all the way until today in aggregate, no, I think most of us expected a little bit more from him. But it just, you know, some freshmen take a little bit longer to get going, and he seemed to be one of those. And, you know, he got some tough love from Mike Woodson. It seemed to work because while he remains a below average defender, he's improved from where he was at the beginning of the season. And so, you know, overall, the trajectory is really good. And the production that you got from him at the end of the season, you can win with that, you know, from your freshman. Now, you need the other guys, the veteran guards, the bigs, to be able to step up and do more. But Mackenzie Mbako certainly did a lot to contribute to Indiana's five wins and showed what he can do, you know, down the stretch. And so he's another guy, you know, who's probably going to go through the process of going through NBA workouts and seeing, you know, what that has in store for him. But if Indiana's able to get him back for a sophomore year, he's a building block type player that just has Big Ten breakout written all over him. But only time will tell if we will actually get that chance. Let's move on now to the Hoosier Hustle Award. The Hoosier Real Hustle
Award. Hi, this is Anthony Leal, and it's time for the Hoosier Hustle Award. But first, let's talk about my friends at Security Pro 24/7, who provide trusted and reliable security for your event or business. From Bloomington, my hometown, to Evansville, where Coach Calvert Chaney grew up, and everything in between. Just like hustle can't be measured by stats, prevention can't be measured either, but it has a huge impact on your bottom line and peace of mind. So let the security pros at Security Pro 24/7 help you prevent a bad outcome today. Visit securitypro247.com to learn more. That's securitypro247.com. And tell them Anthony Leal sent you.
Thank you, Anthony. Anthony Leal with the game-winning shot last night. Unfortunately, there were no opportunities for game-winning shots tonight. But Hustle Award, Josh, you lead us off. Who gets your Hustle Award for this game?
Did you just ask me? You cut out for a second.
Yes. Yeah, Josh.
Hustle Award. Okay. Sorry about that.
All good.
Xavier Johnson, he played 32 minutes. He did not, his hustle didn't waver. He gave it everything he had, and it's what he did for the majority of his Indiana career and the majority of his college basketball career. Obviously, there were some times where he had his downs, he had his low points, but there was a lot of hustle from him in his entire three-year career with Indiana, and it was no different tonight.
Yeah, again, those of you who would say no hustle awards for, you know, 27-point losses where the last 10 minutes aren't even competitive, I hear you. But if we're going to give one out, I would give mine to X as well, as much as a kind of career achievement award as for tonight. And, you know, just as a way to recognize that, you know, when the season was in the dumps 3 weeks ago, you know, and it didn't even seem like this team might win another game, he came back playing hurt, and the performances were a little bit up and down, but it was win after win after win after win. And, you know, for him to do that and at least go out, you know, contributing to some winning basketball and, you know, kind of proving his toughness and how much he does care about Indiana basketball, that was nice to see. You know, there have been all kinds of problems with him on the court, off the court, all that stuff. But, you know, I think he was a net positive for Indiana basketball. You know, think about what the point guard play was like in between Yogi Ferrell and X arriving. And so even though it wasn't perfect, you got some highs from him that you just haven't had from other point guards. And we didn't get to see that a lot this season. It was by far the least efficient and least productive season of his career. But I think he went out showing his toughness and showing his love for his teammates. And to me, that's what always spoke to me. And even when there were times where it's like, what is this guy doing? The play isn't good. The decisions aren't good. But his teammates and his coaches stuck by him in a way that I thought was unique and interesting. And that was always what kind of tipped the scales for me and why I stayed in his corner. And, you know, I was proud of him for how he played these last few games. You know, and so it was nice to see. So Hustle Award to X for me. Coach Marlow, who gets your Hustle Award?
Well, I'm going to go with CJ here. I just want to make sure we get a chance to throw in CJ here. We've talked a little bit about it. I mean, you can make the argument as garbage minutes, but I like seeing somebody who at least was going to come out and maybe selfishly, but I'm going to give the kid benefit of the doubt that he was out there trying to make shots for this team to see what he could do. And with that, and yes, it's easier sometimes when the other team may not be as focused, as locked in, but in 24 minutes, he put up 17 points, had one rebound, had an assist, had a block, had a steal, you know, and I made the comment in the Discord. I was being a little bit sarcastic, but it was as close as we've had off the bench to a Vinny Johnson type performance. And so I'm going to at least mention CJ here for the Hustle Award.
Okay. No, that's fair. That is fair. Well, there are no more shows scheduled, no more post-game shows for sure. So we will all sit back, watch how the semifinals of these conference tournaments play out. And then, you know, our bracketologist friends, Andy Bottoms and Brian Tonsoni, will be getting no sleep, but such is the life that they chose. And so we wish them luck getting their brackets in. We'll all watch Sunday. Coach, what's the plan for the women's selection show watch party? When is that? And is that just for the community?
Yeah, well, we're going to have it here on YouTube. You can, anybody who wants to jump in and follow us on the live YouTube, we're going to have the live, it'll be live on YouTube.
Oh, nice.
8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central. We're kind of stealing the idea from Galen with the watch party. So we're basically going to kind of watch the show and comment as the draw gets, you know, released. And obviously nice. The focus is going to be on the Hoosiers, but we're also, there should be at least six other, maybe seven Penn State, the Penn State women are right on the bubble right now. They're either the second team out or the first team out, depending upon which bracketology you're looking at. So there could be another six or seven Big Ten teams. And then we'll kind of break down the bracket a little bit with, especially the bracket Indiana's in, and, you know, kind of look at what that's going to be like and just kind of, you know, have a little fun with it and kind of see, you know, Austin Render is going to join us. The voice of the Hoosiers on the women's side is going to join us. And we might have some other special guests hop in as well, but we're still waiting on a couple people to get back to us. So, but anybody that, you know, willing to come in, watch us on YouTube Saturday, you know, Sunday night, we're going to be here kind of breaking down and having a little fun with it. We're just going to talk basketball. We're going to talk about IU women. We're going to talk Big Ten. We're going to talk kind of nationally what we think of the draw.
Nice. That'll be a lot of fun. Okay. So check out the YouTube page and we'll be tweeting about that and giving you details as it comes closer. You know, lingering questions. It feels like there's tons of lingering questions with this program right now, and certainly way more than we have time to talk about today at the end of a post-game show, but we'll have all off-season to talk about them. I guess all I will say, let me get your guys' thoughts on this as we look ahead to a very, very important transfer portal season for Indiana, just to create a competitive roster for next year, and then to say nothing of hopefully building a foundation for the future. This roster is going to need a lot. And I know we're still trying to figure out who's staying and who's leaving. But Josh, if you were able to give the coaching staff a list of priorities in terms of players, player archetype that they need to target in the portal, what is number one on your list?
Point guard, seasoned veteran point guard. I think there's names spiraling around, but honestly, it won't start until Sunday when guys actually enter the portal. I know Indiana and every team in the country is already contacting guys, but it's got to be a seasoned point guard. You have a two guard in Trey Galloway, and as we saw this year, Trey's not so good being the one, the one, handling the ball at the point. So you need, and I'm not going to, it's going to be, it's in, all in good fun, but Xavier Johnson plays at Southern Illinois. I don't know if he has any more years of eligibility, but if we can, we can get a Xavier Johnson back at Indiana, one like that, I would be happy with. But something like that, a third or after their junior season, maybe a grad transfer from an Ivy League school, one of the mid-majors, poach one from there. So point guard and anybody that can shoot the basketball, because I'm not going to lie to you, it is very frustrating to watch a team not being able to shoot the basketball from deep, especially a team like Indiana.
Especially for a free throw guy like you. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. I never missed two free throws. In I was like Steve Alford. I missed a couple shots in my younger days, and then I was never going to miss two free throws ever again.
Good. That's good. Coach Marlowe, are you in the same boat? Is point guard, and preferably a point guard who can shoot, is that the very top of your list?
I'd take a point guard who can shoot. I think this team might actually benefit more from like Trey Galloway being the point forward. I think you play Trey Galloway as a Paul Pressey type point forward, somebody like that. Cause I think if you saw those last 5-6 games before Trey got injured, they were playing at their best when Trey had the ball and it was making decisions going, and playing, making, especially getting downhill off some of the screen action. You know, this is a kid that, again, for better or for worse, he had some games that didn't play so well, but he had double-digit assist games, two or three times this year he had double-digit assist games. So I'm not sure that the point guard is my priority. My priority in the portal is very simple. Shooters. We can overcome, in my opinion. Heck, I even take Gabe Cups next year with a summer strength and conditioning as my point guard. If we get shooters, the point guard doesn't necessarily have to be as dynamic if you have some shooters. Now, will a dynamic point guard help some of your shooting? Sure. But right now it's got to be, and I loved it, Jared, that the clip you had on with the intro or the segue was Nick Zeisloft. Give me a Nick Zeisloft. I totally agree with Josh. Go out into the portal and raid a Missouri Valley team or a MAC team for a kid like Nick Zeisloft. And like two or three of them, go get those guys. And I would be very, very happy. I don't need another big. I was not necessarily one who was big on the Derrick Queen recruitment. And if Malik's back, fine. But I don't want the double post offense anymore. I want to see us play a more modern 4-out, 1-in or 5-out offense. And again, I know you got to have some rim protection. But I don't want them. I don't need them to go get Peyton Sparks. I never understood that one. No offense to the kid. I never understood that one. But shooters above all else.
Yeah, I mean, definitely so many needs for offensive firepower. And that's the thing is, Mike Woodson, when he came in, I mean, he talked about doing the 4-out, 1-in and all of that. And we haven't seen a whole lot of that, obviously. But he also talked about building a foundation of defense. And I think, one of my lingering questions is what kind of program do we want to be? Are we a program that recruits to its defense and then tries to fit guys into an offensive system? Or are we going to be a team that recruits great, talented players, builds an offensive system around them, and then gets them to play at kind of a minimum level of defense because of the culture and because you can kind of coach up defense, right? And I think right now we're kind of in between what we're going to be, because it felt like we, recruited guys like an Anthony Walker who could play a specific style of defense, but that specific style of defense got carved up all season long. And so there's a lot of questions like this that, I think you really have to think deeply about as a program, because the best programs understand who they are and recruit to it. And right now we still feel like a program that's trying to figure out who it is. Now, you may balk at that because the coach seems to have a pretty good idea of what he thinks the program is, but I think a lot of us are wrestling with how well that actually matches the reality of, what is rewarded in college basketball on a nightly basis. So,
and Jared.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I thought you were done. the name I'll throw out there, and I'm not sure exactly, I'm not sure I'm a whole 100% in, but he had one hell of a tournament so far down in the I believe it was the A Sun, and that's Blackman's little brother. You know, there's a name for you to keep an eye on, and at least if he goes into the portal or anything. A lot of people were discussing that during the last week or so. But I agree with you. I do want to go in there. One thing you mentioned there, what is the identity? I think that is a lingering question for this entire offseason, is what is the identity of this program? You said it. Mike Woodson thinks he knows. It's time for him to show the fan base what the identity is. It's either offense or defense or something, but what is our identity?
Yep. All right. Well, you're listening to the Assembly Call. I mean, look, so many lingering questions. We'll get to them as the offseason goes forward. But, you know, and that's probably good to, you know, get a few days, get a week, you know, removed from the final loss of the season, which unfortunately brought back so many memories of the rest of the season after that 5-game winning streak. You know, really kind of allowed you not to forget that all the rest of it happened, but at least, you know, kind of hopefully go into the offseason with kind of a positive feeling. And it kind of feels like the loss tonight may have undone a lot of that, you know, just because of how bad it was and how many things were put on display tonight that remain real lingering issues for the program. But anyway, go check out our friends at Home Field Apparel. Use the promo code HOME23 at checkout, and you'll get 15% off your first order. Gentlemen, last call. Josh, you go first. Final thoughts on not only this Indiana game, but this Indiana season.
Yeah, that was about everything. It was the entire season wrapped up in 40 minutes or 28 minutes, really. I'll give it 40 minutes. With very little expectations. I was talking with some people before the tournament last week, and it was one of those things where, what were the expectations for this team? It was the first year post Trace Jackson Davis. It was unknown about who's going to be able to shoot the basketball, who's going to start, are we going to have healthy players? So all in all, it was about as I expected it. The expectation was that there was no expectation. So obviously you wanted to at least play competitive tonight. Didn't happen after about the 12-minute mark of the first half. But it's one of those years where we just didn't know anything about the team, and we still don't even know much about the team. After, what was it, 33 games this year, we didn't know much about this team. They didn't really have a true identity other than we're going to try to shove it down your throat in the paint. So was it a failed season? I think every failed season where you're not winning Big Ten championships or national championships are, oh, the lights go down on me. Ooh, that was cool. Sorry.
We're all going to be in the dark.
Yeah, the Big Ten Network just wrapped up, so everything's over there. So
me too.
I just
working
think,
longer than the Big Ten Network.
I mean, they've been here a lot earlier than I was. I can tell you that. I was taking a nap while Dave Revzine was talking. So I'll give them credit. Bruce Weber can talk all he wants. I mean, that's my favorite Big Ten coach of all time. I'm not going to lie.
Nobody's listening to him.
His voice is
Bruce Weber.
Really?
Yeah. In West Lafayette. Yeah, we lived across the street from him for like 4 years.
His brother used to be a really good coach in the Chicago area. And back to Nick Zeisloft, you're telling me that Illinois shooters are better than Indiana shooters. I like that, Coach Marlowe. Moving on completely.
Cut his mic.
Yeah, it's just one of those seasons where we didn't know much about the team before, during, or after the season, and it's kind of like a wash game. Just flush it, let's act like it never happened, and regroup for next year.
Coach Marlowe, last call.
I better watch what I say. Horrible end to the season in terms of just this game. All the things that we had question marks about this team through the middle of the season, hustle, effort, did they care? Kind of came back at times tonight, especially as Nebraska was making that run and into the second half a little some as well. I will disagree. I think to a certain degree, I agree with Josh that every season does end disappointingly if you don't win a title, and even more so maybe if you're not winning the national title. But I think there were expectations that this team was going to make the tournament, that this was going to be a 22 or 23 win team. and to not get there. And I think and I'm not the biggest metrics person. Jared, you and I have had this discussion before, like at the meetup and stuff, that we may not always agree about the metrics, but it is what the NCAA uses. And so as the metrics tumbled, during the season, I just think it gave the fans and myself, you know, that like, what exactly is going on? Why aren't we better in terms of understanding that, you know, we might have lost some games that to teams that were good teams, you know, Kansas and those type of games, but why were we tumbling down the metrics so bad to the point where this is going to rank as probably what the worst season metrically since the first or second Crean years? You know, it's worse than any of the Archie years. So I think that's the thing here is that nobody expected this. I think that's what caught everybody kind of, if you would have told us we were going to be 19-14, 20-13, if we'd won tonight and been kind of a bubble team, a 9-10 seed, I think people could have accepted that. Like, okay, you know, transition year, as Josh said, with that. But I do think that my last take here tonight, my last call on this is I want to thank everybody here in the community. You guys have been so welcoming to me. And as I've come on the show over the several years that Jared's had me on, I just want to thank everybody. Thank Jared. And then of course, all the people who also come along and watch us on doing the work and stuff, but just want for tonight to thank the Assembly Hall fans and the chat mob who are here tonight to always welcome me in on the show.
Absolutely. Good points by both of you. We'll have a lot more to say about this in the off season. I think the last thing that I want to say tonight as the season ends is, you know, there are a lot of reasons to explain why a rebuilding year that we knew was going to be a rebuilding year that started at 50th in KenPom, which, you know, seemed low. That was the lowest of the metrics. But I think a lot of us were like, okay, that's probably lower than I think, but that's probably within the reasonable, you know, outer realm of how bad this could get. And then for that to, I mean, when we started today, Indiana was 87th in KenPom, predicted to lose by 6 to Nebraska. We lost by 27, so that's probably going to, you know, as our KenPom rating has done at the end of seasons, really dropped after a poor final game. You know, so why did that happen? You know, I think, talking about Xavier Johnson's injuries is an explanation. That's reasonable. That prevented this team from being its best self. Other injuries throughout the year to Trey Galloway and others didn't help. This was a relatively young roster that was very new in a sport where you've really got to hit the ground running in November and December. And so that put this team. And look, even the best program builders are going to have cycles where one year your team is just young and inexperienced because you built up to a successful season like Indiana had last year. So was that part of the explanation? Yes. And I think you can go on down the line, and there are things that maybe we overrated or underrated in the offseason, things that happened in the season to increase the degree of difficulty. The problem is, even when you add up all those things, mix them all together, and spit out what should have happened, it was better than what we saw. And that's the frustration for so many Indiana fans is, you know, kind of seeing what the team was capable of over the 5-game winning streak and then wondering why it took so long to get there and where that was. And then now how you can do that and then come out on a night like tonight and just get obliterated in your final game of the season. So, you know, is extremely disappointing season. Obviously, a lot of just ups and downs in terms of how the fans and all of us processed it. But I think the bottom line is, you know, this program has a lot of work to do and a very difficult needle to thread to not just create a competitive roster for next year, but also be laying a foundation for the future. And we'll spend a lot of time this offseason talking about it and analyzing it and trying to figure out how it's going. But I think if you want to hold on to some of the hope from that 5-game winning streak, I think that's perfectly fair. There were some good individual performances and some growth that if those guys are back, you can build on. But I think if you also are going to look at tonight as a reminder of what this team has been at its worst, and it's been that way way too often the last 3 seasons, I think that's also perfectly fair. Because until nights like tonight get fixed, you know, it's going to be very hard for this program to achieve the goals that it states that it has for itself. And that I think the true fans of Indiana basketball believe it's their job to help hold, you know, the program too, if they're going to say that. And because we believe that it is possible. So hopefully we'll see some steps this offseason that we're moving toward that. Unfortunately, we didn't really see many of them in tonight's performance. But I think that'll do it for us on this edition of the Assembly Call IU Post Game Show. As always, if you want to see us do the show live, be part of the live chat, make sure that you subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/assemblycall. Don't forget to go to assemblycall.com and join our newsletter. Special thank you to Bob Thompson for the music you hear on the show. Special thank you to John Ringer of rigdesign.com for designing our logo. And as always, thank you for listening. We will be back to talk IU hoops again with you soon. Until then.
Take it from me, Max Bielfeldt. Keep your calves flexed, your elbows in, and your eyes on the rim. And go Hoosiers.
Oh, hang on.
Another shooter in the portal.
I think they've gotten enough show.
There you go. Everyone's definitely had enough post-game show for this season.